We're back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell and I are talking with Dennis Hayes, and we're in Oberlin, Ohio. I don't want to leave that subject until I get a very clear sense from you. Government isn't they in a democracy. It's us. And don't we have a right to say what the parameters are in which our corporations, which it is worth, we were talking the other day, it is worth saying, government gives the privilege of being a corporation in the first place, and we're it. This business of government isn't them. Don't we forget that?
We do, and ironically, at this point, I'll reverse directions just a little bit, because increasingly government is driven, elected officials at all levels are driven by campaign financing schemes that have removed an awful lot of power from the hands of individuals. I mean, once you get to the point where running for the Senate is costing you $25 or $30 million, or running for the presidency, you're not even a player unless you show you can raise $50, $60, $70 million plus federal matching funds. That means that suddenly some people, some entities, are far more equal than others, and I really worry about that in a democracy. And in this era where the ability to write checks is so clearly linked to influence, I'm personally really grateful, and although many people don't think of it as an environmental issue, I think it's just at the heart of democracy that President Clinton did veto this effort to get rid of all inheritance taxes. I mean, what we had our revolution about in the United States was to escape a landed aristocracy. In 2 years, the amount that already escapes all inheritance taxes will be more than $1 million. I mean, the ability to pass on $100 million, $500 million, $30 billion to your kids untouched, without them doing anything except choosing their mother and father very carefully, creates a kind of society that I think would be anathema to all of our founding fathers, and I'm very proud of the president for that move.
And we need to thank our government leaders when they do the right thing, as well as complain when they do the wrong thing. The idea that it's okay to have $1 million and anybody can have $1 million is so kind of amazing to me, that that's the bottom line, and from there it goes up.
We've sort of launched into this assuming that something needs to be done. That everything is not just hunky-dory the way it is. There are people, I think a lot of people, who don't believe there is such a thing as global warming. A lot of people who think that the way we are going, we're you know, in certain technical terms, living in the most prosperous times that any people on Earth have ever lived.
And that it will last forever.
It's a great party, and the party looks, you know, gives all the evidence of looking like it's going to go on forever. And there you are, and us as willing accomplices saying, you know, you might want to look around. There may be some problems, but I think a lot of people don't think that's plausible. Hmm. Do you think it's plausible?
Well, again, this is where you walk this line between taking pride in what's been accomplished and then focusing upon what's left to be done. I mean, one of the alarming things is that polls would come to a conclusion that is sort of the opposite of what you're attributing to the public. The vast majority of Americans believe that very little has been accomplished on the environment since 1970, despite all of these efforts. And that's just not true with regard to automobile emissions, for example, or with regard to the emissions of a wide variety of toxic substances, of precursors to acid rain, water pollution. We've made a whole lot of progress on things that are imminent, and particularly imminent visible threats to people's health and to their children's health. And that's something where it's, you know, if you're an organizer and you can talk to a mother and say, this thing's poisoning your children, that's about the easiest organizing there is to do. And it's been done, and it's been certainly not wholly successful, and in particular not very successful yet in communities of color and the poorer and less politically powerful communities of the country. But for the broad cross-section of America, that progress has been formidable. Where we've made little or no progress is in most of the big threats to the planet, the things where, to take your example, global warming. There are relatively few people who are experts in any of the sciences, geophysics or climatology, that that think that there's much doubt that humans are causing changes in the Earth's climate. There's debate about the magnitude, there's debate about the pace, there's debate about the consequences, but not much debate about whether it's going on. It's so few that there are, I mean, I literally know the names of every scientist who will be quoted on the other side of that issue.
But this is sort of round up the usual suspects.
And and the usual suspects are all funded by the same small set of coal and oil interests. And they're all Americans, or virtually all Americans. But that's one of those areas where, although everybody knows about it, it's very difficult to get progress. The United States is by far the biggest contributor of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, but we're unprepared to make any kinds of strides, or at least the current Congress is, until we get commitments out of China and India to assure that they're not going to be continuing to increase their emissions. Meanwhile, China and India looks at us and they say, well, your people are producing 50 times as much CO2 per capita as we are. Why are you focusing all this attention upon us? We're nowhere near that level. But why don't you take some bold leadership, and if we can see that you're serious, then we'll get serious. And nobody wants to be first. Everybody
Isn't this like playing third. Chicken?
Yes, except in a, and I'm not one of the great conspiracy buffs on this, but this is an orchestrated game of chicken with referees and umpires and coaches. And it's, I mean, the people who are saying this to them are basically those that are hawking fossil fuels much as others hawk drugs.
You tell a story that I had not come across, and I assume you've checked all the sources, that the same lobbying organization is on both sides of this, arguing that the United States should not do anything until China does something, and then talking to the Chinese and telling the Chinese that until the United States does something, you need petroleum to bring your economy up to world levels. To the extent that that is the case, that is, to me, seems pathologically cynical. to put it gently.
It's pathologically cynical, but it's serving a clear set of economic interests. And that was the Global Climate Coalition that I was talking about. It became the focus of enormous environmental ire. And we began targeting companies that were members of it and bringing shareholders' actions against them and giving them bad press and putting demonstrators outside their buildings. And one after another, after another, after another dropped off until finally the Global Climate Coalition found itself losing companies at such a pace that it kicked all the remaining companies off of its board and now is simply an association of trade associations. So instead of being able to go after Exxon or British Petroleum or Shell or Texaco, now you go after the American Petroleum Institute, but we don't have any leverage to go after the American Petroleum Institute.
They don't sell anything.
They don't have shareholders meeting. So it yeah.
This also sounds cynical.
I was going to say.
It's very clever. I mean, these guys.
Clever and cynical are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, precisely. This is one of the things. This is perhaps the greatest fallacy that I had in my youth, because I loved what I did, so I didn't really think of it as work, but I was in there doing for trivial sums of money, 70, 80, 90 hours a week, week after week after week, and I thought, I'm reasonably bright, and nobody on the planet works as hard as I do, and on that basis, we get me and everybody else in this movement, and we're simply going to prevail. And what I didn't realize is that people who were number 1, 2, 3 in their classes at Harvard Business School and Yale Law School are smarter, and they work just as hard, and they're making a ton of money protecting a series of interests that are incompatible with the best interests of the planet, but viewed in terms of quarterly returns, annual returns, and even decadal returns by those companies that are trying to produce more carbon dioxide year after year after year. They've been heroically successful to date.
In the face of that kind of power, I guess that's the right word, it is very easy for people to throw up their hands and say, well, gee, I am just I. And in the face of all of these MBAs from Harvard and whatever, and yet you, in 1970, and millions of other people did say, yes, but. Maybe you said, yes, and. How does one keep a balance between saying these are stunning powers and yes, I am just one person, but we can save the planet or at least make a difference?
Well, a number of answers. One, what's the alternative? Throw up your hands, move to Tahiti, and sort of go into a drunken slumber for the rest of your life?
Except Tahiti will be underwater.
Move to Switzerland. There have been a number of cases where, over extraordinary odds, David has defeated Goliath. And sometimes it happens in ways that are completely unexpected. And sometimes it has even happened on global issues, in terms of things like the trade in endangered species or the banning of ozone-depleting chemicals. We've scored some formidable victories over massive odds, even as early as 1971-72, defeating the SST on the basis of what it would do to the ozone layer. And you've got enough triumphs behind us now that it's plausible to say, yeah, individuals united together around something that simply makes common sense, particularly in democratic polities, where regardless of how much money they spend, if you can get your message out to people, and the electronics revolution is making it easier and easier to do that, you can prevail.
This is Dennis Hayes. We're going to come back and let him prevail some more in just a moment. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with Dennis Hayes. With the good news and the bad news, we'll return from Oberlin, Ohio in just a moment. We hope that you'll be with us when we return.